This is episode 10 of Floating Point, a semi-weekly podcast about varied technology topics. I'm Andrew Millam, and my co-host is Jack Armstrong. Hi, Jack.
Hi. So, wait, did you say varied as in V-A-R-I-E-D or very as in V-E-R-Y? Because I don't know how extremely technological our topics are.
Actually, I think either one would fit, but I meant varied as in lots These of are different topics.
The most hardcore tech topics you could possibly have.
Well, sometimes we get into the little nitty-gritty details. I think most of that is best served by other podcasts, like Hypercritical and stuff like that.
Right, yeah. I don't think I'm quite that granular about it.
So, last week, Google Maps for the iPhone was released.
Indeed. And it was met with much fanfare. It's kind of everyone's new favorite app, and supposedly led to a 30% increase in iOS 6 adoption, and apparently is just a very, very big deal.
Yeah, it's definitely turned into the technology press's darling right now.
Yep.
It's kind of funny to see them fawning over something like that.
I mean, yeah, I'm thrilled that we have the Google Maps data back.
Have you used the new Maps app?
I have, and first of all, I don't know if it's just me, but I can't find Street View anywhere. Is it not there?
Oh, it is there. It took me a little while to figure it out, too. You have to actually like add a pin or search for a location, and then you're given the option to access Street View.
I see.
So like you can tap and hold on a location anywhere on the map, and it'll drop a pin there, and then you'll see the little Street View control.
Gotcha. Because that was kind of the only reason why I even cared about having it. And oh, I see. Okay, so you. All right, I'm totally derailing and just, you know, talking about my own problems here. But I say you drop a pin, and then you have to pull up the bottom icon where it lists the address, and then from there you can save, share, or do Street View.
Yeah. That sounds right.
And it's just one of those examples of gesture-based interfaces being a little problematic, because there's no indication whatsoever that, well, I guess you tap it. Okay, you know what? I'm just stupid. Never mind. Okay, so that's where Street View is.
I found
good to know.
It kind of difficult to figure out how to do things like that in the app, too. You know, I think the user interface is fairly nice and clean looking, but it definitely doesn't fit with some of the more typical iOS user interaction paradigms.
Right. I mean, it's very Google in the way it's built. It has the icon style and everything like that is very similar to what they're using in Gmail and their main websites these days.
Yeah, and the look definitely fits with the other Google apps for iOS. But there are definitely some things that are kind of jarring, like the tray that slides out from the right side.
Mm-hmm.
I have found myself accidentally opening that over and over again as I'm panning around the map. And I would rather have a set control for it rather than it being a gesture like that.
Yep. Make it a little more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's just kind of hidden away and you might accidentally hit it a few times.
But, you know, overall, it's a pretty good app. It doesn't seem quite as fast as the Apple Maps app.
Yeah, it's not very smooth. It does add vector-based graphics, which I'm thrilled about because, I mean, my biggest annoyance with Google Maps is the fact that you had to load all those tiles every single time you were using it, and it was just really slow compared to this.
Mm-hmm.
And Street View's nice.
Yeah, I really like the fact that whenever you do a search for something, it tells you the time and distance to that location without you having to actually search for directions first.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely really nice. Because, I mean, I think it kind of just anticipates that a lot of the time that's what you're using it for. And, I mean, honestly, that is the case. Usually, I very rarely go into the Maps app unless I'm getting directions. Or sometimes just looking for a phone number, but that's a little different. Yeah, it's hard for me to make too many judgments. I know a lot of people are thrilled about the public transit being built into it. That's completely irrelevant to me because I live in a town with really no worthwhile public transit. I find the whole action out to Google Earth thing a little annoying. I really wish that would be something you could just disable, or maybe even just have it cooked into the app itself, because it seems a little annoying that they're trying to push you into getting a second app simultaneously. And people are complaining about the fact that it recommends you sign in. I really couldn't care less about that. I signed in and didn't really benefit me in any way, but whatever.
Yeah, and I think after the initial time that you declined to sign in, it doesn't really bother you again.
Uh-huh.
I think it shows a sign up button not in the search results, but you know, didn't seem too obtrusive to me.
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of tweaks online now about how to trick your phone into using this with Siri and make this your quasi default Maps app. Have you considered doing that at all, or are you happy with what you have?
You know, I haven't used it enough in actual, like, real-world use to really know whether I'd want to switch to it.
Right.
I like the integration of the Apple Maps and the turn-by-turn navigation with Siri, and I don't think, even though you can tell Siri to get you directions through Google Maps, that it would be as well integrated. So I'm not really sure if I would do that.
Right. Yeah, I haven't really had much real-world usage with this yet to really test its capabilities. I mean, have you actually done any of the routing stuff with it yet?
No, not beyond just tests at home, but I haven't actually used the turn-by-turn navigation in a vehicle yet.
Right.
I might give it a shot today, see how it works.
Oh, right, yeah, because you'd be going for the drive. Google Maps navigation is in beta. Use caution. Okay.
In 800 feet, turn right onto Bird and Mesa Boulevard.
Yeah, some people do like the voice better than Siri's.
Yeah, the voice is it's a little less robotic than Siri is.
Mm-hmm.
I like the interface of the Apple Maps a little bit better, though. I don't know. I don't see myself switching. I mean, Apple Maps works enough of the time for me, and it's been getting better enough for me to just kind of stick with that as my default app. But
yeah, I guess it depends on whether they improve the actual map data fast enough.
Yep.
They did seem to make quite a few improvements over the last few months.
Yep.
And there's talks that Apple has been trying to get Foursquare data into their maps. And I think
right.
Foursquare has a huge location database. So, you know, they've got all the restaurants and shopping malls and all that stuff. And it's probably big enough to rival Google's database.
I'm curious about that, though, because right now they have Yelp integration, and it seems like Foursquare and Yelp kind of, you know, overlap a bit. And I don't really know how they're going to manage that.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. You know, it could be that Foursquare would replace Yelp. I think Yelp is better for reviews, but Foursquare has more varied locations.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about me. I don't use that much stuff. I don't really use Foursquare. I've never checked in or anything like that. I'm certainly not the mayor of my town and, you know, all that stuff. But, I mean, when I first heard about the Foursquare integration, I thought, oh, yay, now it's going to pressure me to start checking in everywhere I go, and I really don't want to do that.
Well, not necessarily. You know, they could just come up with some deal to just use the location database.
Right.
Maybe with a link to the Foursquare app or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think the more data they have, the better. Just to, I mean, if even just for cross-referencing what information they do have. So.
Yeah, I think Google Maps remains to be seen how well Google Maps will really work. But it is great that it's there.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's another option. And again, people are making this big deal about how, Apple was told by Google, or, you know, they got served. And really, this is exactly what Apple wanted. I mean, maybe they, the reputation was slightly tarnished by the fact that their Maps app wasn't perfect when it came out. But the fact is, the reason that Apple did that was because they wanted Google to start using a turn-by-turn vector-based Maps system, and now they have it. So, I mean, it's ultimately a win for the customer and a win for Apple.
Yep.
Especially considering the fact that a lot of these people who are praising Google Maps are saying that it's even better than the Android version.
And that's pretty
which
funny.
Is hilariously ironic, and it really goes to show what kind of dichotomy there is within Google itself when, you know,
it seems like some people are focused on making Android the best product, whereas other people couldn't care less about Android and just want to make the best Google product possible.
Well, it's been, I think it's actually been shown that Google makes more money from iOS than they do from Android.
Yep.
Because people with iOS devices tend to actually use them for smartphone-y kind of things, whereas exactly. people with Android devices, you know, you've got the actual hardcore tech geeks that know what they've got, and they've got these Android devices because they do exactly what they want them to. But then you also have the people that bought them just because they were the cheap smartphone and they thought they needed to get a smartphone and Verizon was pushing it on them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, these days you can get an Android phone for free at pretty much any carrier you go to. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be an absolutely terrible phone, but, you know, oh, it's an Android. I mean, the fact is Google's only making Android phones because they feel like they have no other choice, because all these phone ecosystems are locked down, so they can't exploit the system as much as they could with desktops, where they could, you know, track things and make Google the go-to place for getting information. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, it's kind of funny how Google has become basically the big evil empire company.
Yeah, well, I mean, I really think it was inevitable given the fact that they're an ad-based company, and, you know, with an ad-based company, you're the product, not the other way around, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the biggest new features with iOS 6, other than the new Apple Maps, was the Passbook app. Have you actually used Passbook?
I have desperately tried to use Passbook. I've tried to find opportunities to use it and excuses to pull it out, but it's just never worked out.
Yeah, I think
I've tried to get flights that use tickets on Passbook. I've tried to get movie tickets that use Passbook. I've even tried to use websites to manually build my own Passbook cards to use at stores and things like that, rewards things, and I guess I'm running in the wrong circles again, because I just haven't used it at all.
Yeah, I've tried also with movie tickets particularly, because Fandango, which is, I think, probably the biggest movie ticket seller, they do support Passbook. But
right.
each time I've looked, none of the theaters I was interested in supported the Passbook passes. So you still have to do the old-fashioned thing of actually going up to a kiosk and putting your credit card in and getting a physical ticket printed, and then going and having them take your physical ticket right away.
Hey, which, you know what? You got it good, because, I mean, half the theaters in my area don't even support Fandango at all. So all I can do is get the phone number to call the theater and find out what time movies are showing.
Yeah, well.
That's what I get for living in a city under a rock.
Well, so Passbook hasn't really been useful for that for me. I haven't taken any flights anywhere since it came out, but I don't know if I'd trust using that as my only boarding pass right now.
Yep. I think no matter what, I would have a backup paper one in my pocket, and when it comes down to it, it's hard to say which is more convenient.
Yeah. I could just see coming up to a, you know, security checkpoint and them asking for your boarding pass and you showing them the app and them going, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah. Well, the worst experience I've had, this was prior to Passbook coming out, is when I was using an app called CardStar, or maybe Card King. I kind of went back and forth between the two. But scanners would never actually scan a barcode on the iPhone. It would just fail every time. Mm-hmm. And something to do with the glossy screen or what, I don't know. And it helps that Passbook, by default, brightens the screen as much as possible in order to reduce that risk. But I've never had a successful experience having my phone scanned for anything like that.
Well, the one thing that I have used it for is Starbucks, because I've got my Starbucks card in there, and it has worked every time I've tried it. But Starbucks has been set up for that for a while, because they used barcodes in their own app for a long time.
Right.
And it is really quite convenient. The biggest downside, though, is that, you know, Passbook has a location-aware feature where it each time you turn on your phone, it checks your location, sees if there's something nearby, and it'll show the pass on your home screen without even unlocking the phone first.
Right.
But that feature is limited to 10 locations per pass. So for example, for the Starbucks pass, you have to set your 10 favorite Starbucks locations, and then it'll be aware of when you're in any of those 10, but not any other Starbucks locations.
Really? I had no idea. So you couldn't, like, if you were going on a trip to Texas or something like that, just go to a random Starbucks and have the passbook pop up. You'd have to manually either pull it out yourself or set the location prior to traveling there.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes no sense.
At first that it was just a Starbucks limitation, but, you know, delving into the Apple guidelines and rules about passes, they are limited to 10 locations. And I think the idea is to prevent companies from abusing the location aware feature and having their stuff show up everywhere. But it really cripples the usability of that feature for something like Starbucks, because, heck, most of the time that I go to a Starbucks, it's when I'm in an unusual location.
Yeah, I know. I almost never go to Starbucks unless I'm on a road trip or something like that to an unusual location. So, I mean, and the whole point of Passbook is to have ubiquitous access to all of your cards and all of your, rewards systems and things like that. I tried to set one up for Vons and CVS and those sorts of things. And if it doesn't, if it's not aware of when you're at those places and utilize it, then there's really not much point to it.
Yeah. My city has a local discount card kind of thing where you buy it and a whole bunch of local businesses give you discounts and free meals and stuff like that. And I was thinking that it would be a perfect opportunity for a Passbook pass, because then you could just have it show up anytime you're in a location where that card works. But it would be useless if it was only 10 locations. So I think it's really a missed opportunity with Apple there, and hopefully they'll be changing their rules in the future.
Hopefully, because it just seems like it's a huge missed opportunity and it kind of defeats the purpose of it, at least as a rewards card. I mean, as a direct ticket to a certain place, like to a certain movie theater or to, at an airport or something like that,
it serves its purpose just fine when you can
get it to work. And supposedly it's been very successful on that. American Airlines put out a press release or something like that recently saying that they had 200,000 concurrent downloads of it, of tickets onto their Passbook or something like that. I mean, it made it sound like it was working pretty well for them. But that kind of thing is very different from a rewards card system like at Starbucks, where you need it and you want it at every Starbucks. But of course, that could cause problems where if the GPS isn't 100% accurate, your phone suddenly starts blinking every single time you pass a Starbucks, which could be problematic in itself. But
well, it actually doesn't do it unless you turn the phone on.
I see.
So as soon as you press the home button or the sleep-wake button, it checks your location, and then it'll pop up the card if you're in a location where it supports it. But it doesn't seem to be doing anything while the phone is asleep.
Interesting. Yeah, I really wanted to get good use out of Passbook, and it's just been completely worthless for me so far. As hard as I've tried to make it a part of my system, it just hasn't happened. And I usually go out of my way to make these things part of my system.
Well, that is what we do, isn't it?
Yep. It's what early adopters are all about. Trying out the stuff, figuring out how to make it work, and then convincing everyone else to do it too.
Yep.
I was actually thinking, my sister's a complete Starbucks addict. She's, she says that she goes there twice a day, every day, which sounds like the biggest waste of money I could ever think of, but no judgments there. I was thinking I would get her set up with Passbook when I saw her for Christmas so that she could, use that when she was there, because I know she has a rewards card and was actually asking for Christmas for people to put money on a rewards card so she can keep using her addiction. But it doesn't sound like it's going to be nearly as useful if she's only limited to 10 places where she can take true advantage of it.
Well, you can still unlock the phone and open up the Passbook app.
Yeah, but if you're at that point, you might as well just open the Starbucks app. I mean, like you said, you can use the barcode direct from there. So,
yeah, that's true.
And, the Starbucks app will offer more functionality. I mean, it's a situation like with cameras where there are a lot of superior camera apps like Camera Plus and Camera Awesome and things like that. But the camera app is good enough where you don't need to use those when you just need to take a picture immediately. You can just flick up from the lock screen and you're there. And Passbook needs to be that quick and easy to use so that even if another app has more functionality on a day-to-day basis, you'll stick with Passbook because it's just quicker. And with the system it is right now, that's just not the case.
Yeah, maybe there should actually be an option to show your passes from the home screen, even if it isn't, or from the lock screen, I mean, even if it doesn't have a location for you.
Yeah, it would be nice if maybe there was another swipe gesture or something like that where it just kind of pulled up the list of your passes and you could just pick one, because as is right now, having to unlock, go find the app, and then open it, and then find your card is a much slower process than just going to the Starbucks app.
And I guess it depends on where you've got your Starbucks app buried in your home screen.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, a lot of apps like that, especially the ones that are integrated with Passbook, I kind of just tuck in a utilities folder and put it in the far end of my screen.
Yeah, I'm afraid I've got probably half a dozen different utilities folders.
Yep, yeah, all those ones that are that serve no purpose except the one time when you actually need it or just have some background service that you want.
Yeah, you know, for the first couple of years, I never used the Spotlight search feature on the phone, but at some point, my app collection kind of exceeded the limits of what I could remember as far as their locations. So
yeah, it's the same situation with me, and I don't know whether that's a problem with Apple's, you know, on Apple's part that the system is just not very organized as is. I mean, their, you know, method of folders and stuff is a little lackluster, but then again, I can't think of anything better. So I do wish that Spotlight were on the home screen, and I know they actually considered that at one point, and there is a jailbreak hack for that. It'd be nice if just above the top row of icons there was just a little search button. You just tap it and you could start typing instead of having to hit the home button twice or swipe all the way over to the left or something like that.
Yeah, I guess that could be convenient.
Yeah.
Well, did you see this thing about the possible 6-month cycle for Apple products?
I did, and I think it makes sense. And I think it was kind of an inevitability. I mean, I haven't really thought that they were crazy for not doing it yet, like some people think that they are. But given the rapid cycles and given the fact that usually the way their devices work is that they have one revolutionary product, then one standard iteration of that product, then another revolutionary product, kind of like the 3G, 3GS, 4, 4S, 5, probably the 5S, et cetera. And, you know, the iPad 3 and the iPad 4, which is basically just a slightly nicer iPad 3. I don't know. I see it being a distinct possibility, and I kind of hope so because, I mean, I didn't get the iPhone 5 yet, and if I knew that there was a better one just, you know, a month or two down the road, or just, you know, 3 or so months, I'd be happy to keep waiting.
Yeah, now, for those that don't know, it was actually John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple, he was CEO before Steve Jobs came back, suggested that he thinks that Apple is going to be switching to a 6-month product cycle instead of a 1-year product cycle, which would probably mean a new iPhone and iPad in the spring and in the fall. And of course, that would be a major change because those products have pretty much always been separated by at least a year. And sometimes more, like between the iPhone 4 and 4S. But just recently, with the iPad 4, they actually, I think it lasted for less than 6 months, right?
Yeah, it came out in March just over. And was replaced in October, or maybe November. So yeah, just about half a year.
And, of course, John Sculley is probably just speculating, but there have been several people who have speculated recently, including Horace Dedieu of AsimCo, who really goes into the nitty-gritty details of supply lines and things like that. And he thinks that the product cycle is going to be moving to a more rapid release schedule.
The only problem I see with it... and it's not really a very tangible problem, is just the fact that always knowing that there's going to be another product just 6 months down the line, I think will somewhat reduce the excitement of a new product each time it comes around, because you know that it's going to be much more quickly replaced than in the past. A year just seems much longer and much more longer than just 6 months.
Well,
but that's,
you know, the big
question. And Apple's usually about the kind of thing where they want to make everything that's coming out immediately look like the most important thing that's going to be around for the next year. So I think it'll be a slightly different mindset going into these kinds of products for the customers and for Apple, but it does make sense.
Well, it does seem to me as if the fall release would be the best time for the big new product, and then the spring release could be an upgrade.
Exactly.
You know, like you said, the 5S. But the big question to me is, would this mean better products or just more products? Because I think it could be argued that the iPad 4 that was released this fall wasn't really necessary.
Yeah.
You know, the iPad 2 and 3 were still strong sellers. The iPad 4 is a big improvement in CPU power, but not really anything else. So they could have easily waited until spring and released something. I don't think it would have hurt their sales at all.
Right. Yeah, I think part of the, I mean, I think a lot of ways the only reason they really did that was because they figured they ought to update the iPad 3 with a Lightning connector. And so they just thought, well, you know, what the heck, let's just do the whole kit and caboodle while we're at it. But yeah,
it is possible that the new processor parts in the iPad 4 are cheaper, so they wanted to move onto a different product line at this point.
Yeah, it's true.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting, and it'll become even more of a problem for us early adopters.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing I was going to bring up, because the system we have right now is pretty nice for an early adopter. Or quasi-early adopter, or even if you're the kind of person who just wants the next new phone as soon as it's justifiable, which is usually at the end of your two-year contract, then the system that they had before was really good, because you could get the iPhone 4, and the next year the iPhone 4S would come out, and you're like, oh, that's pretty cool, but it's just, you know, a better version of the iPhone 4. And then the iPhone 5 comes out 2 years later, and it's this big improvement, and it's right on time for your contract to end and for you to upgrade to a new product. Whereas now, you're going to be skipping over a few more exciting generations each time you wait, or you're going to have to put down more money, pay early termination fees, and well, not early termination fees, but pay less subsidized prices for the new phone. So it's kind of a disappointment for the early adopters in that sense. It'd be much more painful each time a new upgrade comes around, unless, as you said, the updates are just less substantial. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd feel about an iPhone 5S coming out in March.
Right. And it'd always make it I'm the kind of person where you know, when my sisters ask, "Oh, should I, you know, like ask for a new iPad for Christmas?" You know, in the past I was the kind of person who would say, "Well, I mean, you can ask, but there's going to be a better one in 3 months, so you might just want to wait." And now we're in a situation where, you know, there is a new one, but there's still going to be a better one, and it makes it that much more difficult to decide whether to buy or whether to wait. Whereas when there's a year space in between, there's a more distinct, you know, get this one now or wait, which I guess is part of the reason why they might be doing it, because they didn't really want that, oh, well, let's just wait for the new one, period, like there is right now.
They just want there to be always a new one.
Exactly. Yeah, I think people have caught on to Apple's cycles. So starting around June or July or so, people buy them much less frequently because they know a newer and better one's just down the road.
Well, I guess we might not have too long to wait to find out if that's going to be true, because if the iPhone 5S is really going into production soon, we'll probably have parts leaks and things like that pretty quickly.
Yep. Yeah, they're not getting so good at that secrecy thing these days. There was the rumor recently about Foxconn testing, you know, 45 to 55 inch TVs recently. So now all the speculation about the Apple TVs going through the roof and on and on. But we don't really have any news and rumors about that right now.
No, we do have news and rumors about the Apple TV box, though, and its possible addition of Bluetooth support. So I guess the Apple TV has actually supported Bluetooth, or it's had Bluetooth built in for a long time, but didn't actually make use of it. And so people are now reporting that in a beta version of the Apple TV software, there is support for Bluetooth keyboards.
Yeah, I saw this. And the keyboard part it doesn't really matter to me so much. I mean, I don't really care about that, but the Bluetooth part and the potential for the Bluetooth support has me pretty excited for what could be coming down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the keyboard itself is, well, how often do you need a keyboard on your Apple TV? There isn't a web browser or anything like that, so...
Right, the only time you really need it is when you're putting in, when you're doing searches or when you're logging in, and when you have that...
Yeah.
I mean, the vast majority of people who have an Apple TV already have an iPad or an iPhone anyway, so they can just pull out their iPhone and use the keyboard on there with the remote app, which is extremely handy. I use it all the time. It's a fantastic app.
Yep. But if there's a possibility of apps for the Apple TV and games for the Apple TV, then support for Bluetooth, which could be used for game controllers, for instance, could be very important.
Yep. I'm curious what the latency would be like with a connection between the iPhone and the Apple TV, what the difference would be between its current setup over Wi-Fi and a direct Bluetooth connection, whether or not it would be faster or slower over Bluetooth. Do you have any knowledge about that, about
speed
differences?
That for the direct connection between a controller and the Apple TV, Bluetooth will be plenty fast. I believe that PlayStation uses Bluetooth for its controllers. But going between the phone or iPad and the Apple TV, that's where the big lag comes in, which is why I'm hoping that you'll be able to actually run apps on the Apple TV instead of having to do the AirPlay thing.
Right. And yeah, of course, people have those pretty hack methods of making an app of sorts for the Apple TV, but it doesn't quite get the job done.
Yep, and it's always seemed kind of crazy to me to stream something to your iPad and then stream it from there to your Apple TV, which shows it on your TV.
Yeah.
When really the iPad should just be telling the Apple TV to stream it on itself.
Yep.
Save that extra step of having to transmit all that data over your local network.
Yeah, it's twice as much work for the Wi-Fi network to do. It doesn't really make any sense.
But this Bluetooth thing does have me a little bit worried in that, I'm worried that the next generation of the Apple TV may drop the infrared support and be Bluetooth only, or Bluetooth and Wi-Fi only. And we could be in a situation like we're in with the PlayStation 3, where it does not have infrared support, and that means it's a pain if you use a universal remote.
Yeah, and this isn't a big deal for the majority of customers, but for people like you and me who have our universal remote tied to every possible thing we can, it'd be much, much less simple to have everything connected.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hackarounds for these things. You have the Harmony Logitech connection for your Apple TV, and I have the I don't even know what it's called, IR2BT or something like that. Mm-hmm. But those are hacks at best, and they're not ideal at all.
Yeah. But, it's possible that there could be a universal remote that supports Bluetooth at some point, particularly if there are more and more devices that use it for control.
Yeah, and not many do these days, like you said. There's a PlayStation and there's potentially the upcoming Apple TV, but not much beyond that. And I don't know. We're just going to have to wait and see. But currently there's no universal remote out there, as far as I'm aware, that supports Bluetooth, or at least supports it universally.
Yeah, in a way that you could actually program it, because that's what you have to be able to do.
Yep. Yep. There are some that support RF and some that even support Wi-Fi and Z-Wave and things like that, but those are even more obscure and less commonly used.
Mm-hmm.
For remote use, at least.
Well, I had a subject I wanted to talk about, which is not exactly gadget-related, but it does kind of harken back to
it's,
something.
It's a gadget of some kind.
Well, I complained about something related to this in one of our earlier episodes, I think. And that's car naming schemes. The car manufacturer Infiniti just announced the other day that they are going to rename every single car in their model line. Every single one. Now, that's crazy.
Every single car. And they're not going
to
make it more diverse. They're going to make it more similar.
Yep. Every passenger car or every sedan and coupe is going to be given the Q name, and every SUV and crossover, no matter how different they are, is going to be the QX. And the distinguishing feature between these cars will just be the number after the Q or the QX. So what was the Infiniti G35 before, or G37, is going to become the Infiniti Q50. And what was the M is going to be the Q70.
My first question is, what does the Q stand for?
I think it's just, it's a relatively unused letter. You know, right. Infiniti actually had a spokesperson try to kind of explain why they made that decision in I think it was a Facebook post. And, you know, they talked about the difficulty of coming up with names that aren't already used by other car manufacturers and so on. And, you know, that's a kind of a justifiable statement, except for the fact that he didn't explain what was wrong with their old naming system in the first place.
Right.
Their old naming system
the thing.
Had,
I mean, they
distinct
had a,
names
I mean,
for each I mean, of their cars.
I wouldn't say it was the most understandable and logical setup, but everyone knew what it was, or at least anyone who's familiar with Infinities, they're familiar with the system.
And a lot of the Infiniti cars were pretty well respected. I mean, I think pretty much everybody who's into cars knows about the Infiniti G35, for instance,
yep.
Or yeah, the QX56, which is one of the best large luxury SUVs.
Yeah.
So it's just, it seems insane to me for them to be throwing away all those names in favor of a system that is very complex and confusing.
Not only that, but they're somewhat changing the hierarchy of it, because the way it worked before was there was the EX, the FX, the JX, and the QX. And as he went down the alphabet, the car got bigger. The EX was the crossover, the FX was an SUV, the JX was a 7-seater SUV, and the QX was one of those crazy, you know, Ford Expedition or Ford Excursion type cars, just massive. But now they've flipped it around a bit. Now that, well, first of all, I'm not even going to try to remember the numbers. All I know is that the number for the FX is now higher than the JX.
Yep.
And when we were discussing this before, you said that was because FX is, you know, like technically a more luxury car than the JX, but it's flip-flopping the system they had before, and it's completely changing the hierarchy of it. And considering they just named the JX, I mean, that car is only a year old, if that. It just seems absurd that they're changing it so quickly.
Yeah, and, you know, the numbers, the hierarchical numbers kind of make sense in some ways, but they're going to result in much more complicated overall names, because most of their cars have multiple engine options, and in the past, that was, you had like the FX35 and the FX50, for instance.
Right.
And those were two different engine sizes, a 3.5 liter and a 5 liter. So what are they going to do now? Because the FX is now becoming, I think it's the QX70. Is it going to be the QX70 with 3.7 liter engine and the QX70 with 5 liter engine?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there were also the front-wheel drive versus all-wheel drive options.
Okay, it's back.
So is it going to be the, you know, Infiniti Q50 with 5-liter engine and all-wheel drive? So, yeah, this new naming scheme, just it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think it's going to help them out in any way. And I think right now I'm pretty much just hoping that they realize that it's a mistake and change their minds.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the first time that kind of thing's happened. I mean, it seems like it's been a trend recently for people to say one thing and then have to backtrack on it, you know, like Netflix and Quickster and, you know,
University of California and their new logo. Have you seen that?
Oh, man, what a hideous logo that is. It's unbelievably bad. It's one of those just, I mean, it looks like a six-year-old made it. Six-year-old with MS Paint.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's
what was wrong with their good classic logo from before? You know, just put some more polish on that and you're good to go.
Yeah, I feel like we are either seeing things that in the past would never have actually made it to the public's eye, or people are trying desperately to make quick decisions and turn things around fast, and so we end up with things that aren't really thought through.
Yeah, but it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, well, no matter what the name scheme is, I'm still going to lust after the EX or the QX50 or 40 or
whatever it is now.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the QX50. Although that actually brings up a question. What happens if Infiniti comes out with a new car that fits in between two of their cars?
55.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Enough of that for now. So this week's Kickstarter project is called My LED. I assume you took a look at that.
I took a brief look at it. I'm going to take another look because I kind of forgot what it was.
Yep.
Why don't you describe it to me while I search for it again?
Well, the My LED is basically a mini LED light that plugs into the headphone jack on the iPhone or iPad.
Ah, yes.
And they
trying to bring back the old school BlackBerry.
Yeah, exactly. They've got some software that uses it for notifications, so you can look at it and it'll be lit up in different colors depending on what's going on. And it definitely is a feature that a lot of phones used to have.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a couple of phones in the pre-smartphone days that had indicator lights on them that would blink if you had a missed call or something like that.
Well, yeah, it was one of those features that BlackBerry had that was just a big hit for the business people because they could kind of just glance down at their phone without having to turn on the screen. They could see whether or not they had an email or message waiting for them. I remember it was kind of a big deal. And then the iPhone came out with its screen and everyone just kind of forgot about it.
Well, I do remember early on there were a lot of complaints about the iPhone not having an indicator light. But then,
yeah, well, that was like people complaining that the iPod didn't have FM radio. I mean, it didn't matter.
Yeah, except that Apple did eventually bring FM radio to the iPod Nano.
Yeah, once everyone stopped caring about it.
Yeah, but, this LED indicator light is actually something I would like to have built into the iPhone. I think it would be a nice option. I don't know if I would use it all the time, but there are situations where it would be nice to be able to just glance at the phone and see whether there's something I missed.
Well, you know, there kind of is something like this that your phone can do if you go into the accessibility column of the settings.
Yes, using the flash.
Do you know about the LED flash for alerts?
I've never tried this, but I have heard of it. So I don't really know
how well it
works.
It's not as useful as this is insofar as that it's not... I don't think it repeats itself very often, but if you have your phone upside down or something like that and you have vibration off, or if you have headphones on or something like that, your flashlight will just click on, click off really quickly, just as a little notification that there's something for you to see.
Yeah, it might be worth trying that. Wait, does it know that it's upside down?
I think it just does it regardless. But, you know, if it's right side up, then it just flashes to nothing. So it doesn't really make a difference other than maybe killing your battery a little faster.
Right.
But, again, it's not as feature-packed as this is because this has multiple colors and everything like that. Now, does this integrate with the stock apps?
Supposedly, it's got an app that runs in the background, and they have apparently figured out a way to be able to tell when there are notifications and things. I'm a little skeptical of that because I'm not aware of a way to do that, but they claim that they have figured it out. So,
Well, the big problem with background processes like that, and it's a problem I run into a lot of the time with this app called Talkatone, which does Google Voice phone call integration, is that it works great when the app is loaded in the background, but as soon as you use too much memory, it kills the app, and then it does nothing. And you have to remember to go back and reopen the app and then re-put it in the background so it can go back to being functional. I have that problem with Talkatone because Talkatone has the ability to notify you when you're getting a phone call on your Google Voice number so you can answer it from the phone instead of having to, you know, answer it with your IP instead of, you know, answering with the actual phone. And it's great when it works, but half the time it doesn't because I haven't been in the app recently.
Interesting.
Yep. And I suspect that this is going to end up with the same problem.
Well, you would think that iOS would prioritize apps that are actually waiting in the background like that.
It's possible that they do, and you know, it's always possible that I'm just wrong about this. It's kind of just my perception of it based on what I've experienced, but it could be that I'm misinterpreting the situation and that it's something else entirely.
But maybe, who knows, maybe it's Talkatone's fault. I mean, I'm not a huge possible. Fan of the app itself. It just, it gets the job done, but it's not a very good app.
Well, anyway, this, you know, I'm not sure how much I would really like this particular LED because it does stick out of the phone. I don't really like that part of it.
Yeah,
but
if it were a little more built into the headphone connection itself, that'd be kind of cool if it was flush, or a little more flush at least. And like a lot of the things that we view on Kickstarter and that have integration with the iPhone and stuff like that, some of the most interesting stuff is actually what the third parties can do with it. You know, as a timer, something like that could work really well or something like that.
Yeah, I would hope that they would come out with
an API
that other developers can use. So anyway, if anybody's interested, you can find it on Kickstarter. It's My LED, all one word, and there will be a link in the show notes.
Yep, and it did just meet its funding goal, 18,247 out of 18,000. So that's, you know, good for them. But there are 7 days left, so you can still kind of get your pre-order in of sorts if you want to.
And there are still plenty of the $15 price points left. Yeah, so.
Which is a good price. I mean, that's nice and cheap. I'm not sure what the final price of the product is going to be, but I imagine it'll be at least $20 or so.
I would think so, but 15 is not too bad, although it is just an LED light on the end of a headphone jack. Well, I guess this will be the end of our last episode before Christmas, so we want to say Merry Christmas to everybody and Happy Holidays and probably Happy New Year. I don't know if we'll be able to record another show before this New Year.
Yeah, it's unlikely. Happy belated quasi Hanukkah. I'm not sure how far in Hanukkah we are. I think we're like halfway through, so, you know, happy and early Hanukkah to you.
And of course, it's also always possible that we may never be back because of the Mayan apocalypse, which is scheduled for tomorrow.
So, okay. Yeah. Well, in that case, let's all say a prayer together and wish our loved ones the best. And this is the last time you'll hear from me, so I love you all, and it was good knowing you.